Okay, thanks, Howard. I'm Don. I'm an alcoholic, and I suppose if there is an anniversary, this is the first anniversary of me having a go at being a host, and first probably go at doing a chair this time of the day. First time I've been to the 3 o'clock meeting, and I didn't know who attended, or I didn't know anything about it, and I just tried not to think about it because even though I'm quite a while around AA, I still get a bit nervous about doing a chair. I don't feel that I'm I suppose a public speaker or something. I'm more of a listener, and I suppose sometimes I'm afraid of being exposed as a, as wanting in some way, But I'm nevertheless I'm in AA a long time now, I suppose. I've had my 40th anniversary last year, and I'm very grateful for that. I hear a lot of exciting stories and all that, and I suppose I thought mine was pretty bad too when I came in, but I got into AA when I was 26, and I thought I was near the end at the time. I really didn't feel like going on, things felt so bad in my life at that time. But I fairly rapidly discovered, that things weren't so bad at all, really. I still had an awful lot going for me. I was still young, and compared to a lot of other people, although we don't compare, but I got away really light, and I'm always grateful to AA for that, for that little bit where they talk about raising the bottom to meet people where they are, rather than people having to go down, and suffer some more. So I was enabled really by the AA members I met. I was enabled really to see where I was going, to see where I was heading, and to maybe look honestly at what my situation was, And another thing that happened for me when I came in, things rapidly got better for me. I remember at the time I had a fairly good relationship with a girl, but I had let her down several times, and we had even got engaged, but she had given me back the engagement ring. I used to think it was five times. She says three, but it felt like five times, And I had a sister that I was living with, an older sister that was kind of, I suppose she doubled as a mother a lot of the time for our family. And she was 80 there a few weeks ago. But I had been living with her, and she came in one morning, gave me a cup of coffee, and told me to get my stuff together and leave, that she couldn't have me living in her house anymore because of the way I was living and the way I was drinking, And I was in trouble at work, and the usual. I was in trouble in every area of my life, really. And I found myself on my own, and it was like sink or swim. I rapidly went downhill after my sister asked me to leave, and she also had given me some AA numbers and the name of an AA member, and I had them in my wallet. And I think after about maybe 6 weeks on my own, I ended up calling this AA member, and I remember visiting a recovery center and talking to somebody there about my problems. And he advised me to go to an AA meeting. He was one of them brothers, like a monk. And he talked to me for about an hour. And he would have been the first one that I ever admitted. It was the first time and first person I'd ever admitted a chink in my armor or a chink or that I had a problem. Up to that, I denied it vehemently. I would come up with every reason under the sun except my drinking, for my problems. And I understand that a bit better now because, denial is a protection. It was protecting me. I couldn't envisage a life really, changing my life. What would happen if I stopped going to pubs and stopped meeting the people I knew and all that? I couldn't. That was too much to take on at the time, And I didn't do it until I absolutely had to. But like I said, things once I did come to AA, things rapidly got better. I got myself a nice. I got my girlfriend back, and we ended up getting married later that year, about 9 months after I came into AA. I came into AA, no, not 9 months. I came into AA on the last Wednesday in July in 1980, and we got married on the 1st of November. And we had our first child the following May. So, Donna, our daughter, will be 40 this year. And we're still together, and we've reared four children, and they're all they were all on a Zoom call, or not a Zoom call, like a family chat last night while I was in here in the room on an AA meeting. And things are going quite well. You know, I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. There's no doubt about it. As long as, you know, the wild is on the lower end of wild, you know, I have a quiet life, but it's a very sustainable life. You know, I have a house, a modest house, and a garden, and we have everything we need. Like, you know, we have, I live 28 miles from the nearest town, out in the middle of farming country, land on one side and sea on the other. And I've lived here now for almost 40 years. I was born actually in the house that I'm sitting in now. I was born here. People were born in their houses that time. And I was away for something like 30 years and came back again in my early 30s. And I've earned a living around here as a plumber, just working for you know, a job and plumber, working for people, self-employed for a long time. So I got to know an awful lot of people, and I got to know an awful lot of members. Like most of the members in Ballina and Sligo and all the way up to the Midlands would have got me probably to do plumbing for them at some stage. So I've got to work in their houses and get to know them and get to know their wives and families and everything. And it's been quite an experience, you know. It's been testing at times. It was difficult work. And, you know, I was always in some sort of bother or some sort of problems in front of me, you know, to solve. And life is a series of, you know, problems to be solved, really, and situations to get through. And I had some great successes, and I had some very problem times as well, you know. And one of the things we done through our sobriety is we took care of my parents in their old age. And my dad lived to be 82 and my mother lived to be 80. And my wife was a very good carer for them, but she got on fantastic with my dad. He was a nice man. But she had a terrible time with my mother. My mother was kind of jealous of the relationship they had. And it was just, I won't go into it, but it wasn't very nice. But that particular bit of our lives culminated with my wife almost having a breakdown in it. One day, you know, when we were fighting over something, she come and she said, if I didn't leave and take my mother with me, she was going to leave and take the children with her. And that was like, I think, 17 years into my sobriety. And that was the hardest thing I ever went through in my life, because, you know, I didn't know how I'd solve it. I didn't know how I'd get over it. And I had to leave, and I had to bring my mother with me. I did. And I put the, you know, I suppose putting the children first. And I had to find a way to solve it. And I got help. I got help, I do say, from three people, three different women that helped me the most. And all three of them were called Anne. And there was an Anne that lived near where I brought my mother to, who had been to ACOA. She had been, you know, in ACOA for a long time. So she knew a lot of stuff that I needed fairly quickly, you know, to get some emotional strength of my own. I was flattened. I was on the floor, really. And I had to get some sort of emotional strength from somewhere. And she guided me through that a lot. And there was another Anne. I started to go to Al-Anon for a time, because my wife had been to Al-Anon earlier on in our time. And, you know, she seemed to have all the support of her Al-Anon friends and what she was doing and all that. And I couldn't understand that, because I felt that, you know, that it was wrong. You know, our relationship was pretty good. I had a good relationship with the children, great relationship with the children, really. And I used to, you know, take a good part in family life, even though I was busy at work. One thing I'd done every night with them was I used to lay down and read stories for them, you know, when they went to bed. And I've traced that back to being, you know, been sent to bed on my own in a dark room myself. I don't think I ever wished that on any of the children. And I always went down with them and read stories to them. And that was a great time. They remember it today, to this day, you know, they still love that memory. And I couldn't do that during this period, you know, and I used to fucking cry myself to sleep, you know, and I could used to imagine them all lying in their beds at night and, you know, me remote, you know, 100 miles away from them. But I got all sorts of help and worked on it, and we got past it. My mother died soon after that, and my wife, you know, lifted the ban, and I come back to live at home. And it was on a different basis, though. You know, I had to change my ways considerably, and we've gone on pretty good ever since that. You know, we've had a good relationship. We were looking the other day in some cupboards, and we found a game that we bought for Christmas a few years ago, and it's called Family Arguments. And I think we bought it about 5 or 6 years ago, and we haven't had to open it yet. It's still in its wrapper, never opened. We've never needed it. But we're here on our own now, the two of us, and we play cards. We play poker at night. We take out the twos, threes, fours, and fives out of the pack, and then it's okay for two people play. And we it's interaction. We love it. We spend a couple of nights a week, we have a game of Scrabble, and another couple of nights a week we watch something on TV, like shows that we like on TV, and we talk to the children every evening. And I'm happy to see spring coming now. It's lovely to see. I'm really grateful that I'm still alive to see another spring appearing, you know. And I've got various flowers that flower at different times, and a couple of trees that flower at different times, and they're all in bloom now. They're nothing big or nothing showy, but I know where they are, and I know when they come out. And it's one of my ambitions this year to try and watch the birds and see where there's a few nests, because when I was a kid, I used to always know where the birds' nests were around here. And there was an elderly man lived up the road, and he used to help me find them. And if they were too high for me to see into, he used to lift me up and so I could see into the bird's nest. You know, that's a memory I have. And for quite a while, I didn't know where there was any nest, but I know where there's two or three now. I'm watching the birds. I know where they're building them. So that's just something I'm doing. It's an odd pastime, but it's nice as well, though. It feels nice to do it again. You know, that's, I got me jab on Monday. I got me jab, the COVID jab, which I wasn't expecting. I thought it would be another month or two before we got it, but I got a text on Sunday evening at 7:30, which I didn't see. But because I go to a meeting at 9 o'clock on a Sunday night and come in and got my phone to hook up to the meeting, I saw the text there, you know, only for the meeting. I probably wouldn't have seen the text. And I would have got my jab on Monday. And people are talking about after effects from it. And I went into it like I've never had much after effects from anything. So I went into it saying to myself, no, I probably won't have any after effects from this either. And I didn't. I got it all right. Yesterday I did feel a bit woozy and a little bit off, and I leaned against the wall and I realized my arm was all really sore. But if I didn't lean against the wall, I probably wouldn't even have known it. And I slept about 3 or 4 hours last night and woke up, and I had to get up for a while and stay up, and then I went back to bed again. So I have got a little bit of side effects from it, but not too bad. But I'm grateful to have got it now. This has been an awful blast to the senses, really, the last year. I think we're all kind of reeling from it and learning how to adapt to it and wondering how it's going to turn out, you know, and so on. And it's a work in progress, isn't it? We're all, I guess, learning from each other. And I'm kind of lucky that I'm remote, you know, pretty remote from it. But even though I'm remote, there's still my cousin's wife got it up the road, and she lives right as far as you can go on the road up near the mountain. And she got it. You know, you would imagine a place like that would be the least likely place that one would get it. But she does care, home carer job, and she picked it up somewhere. And she's very lucky that she survived it. But, you know, I don't know. My life, it would take me, you know, I don't know what's the most important or the least important. They were the big issues. They were the big things for me. They were the hard things to get through. And I love my daily life here. It's not that exciting. There's no big stories. It's one day after another, but it's real life, and I don't need to enhance it with drink or drugs or something like that. I feel it's as good as it can be, just the way it is, without trying to enhance it. Life wasn't good enough for me when I was young. I always wanted to be more exciting or better, or there had to be something extra. Life as it was wasn't enough, but today. Today, life is enough, you know, just nature and and the ordinary things in life. I try to keep my needs kind of manageable, you know, and keep my needs small, because a person can be kind of wealthy through a lack of needs, more so than through having a lot of wealth or a lot of money and stuff like that, you know. I've learned from a couple of members that were very wealthy that it can be a hell of a burden to have too much stuff. And that's an important lesson I learned in time, because I was very ambitious to have a lot of stuff, and I thought I could never be happy unless I'd done really well. But I have discovered that I can be happy without really having to do all that well, you know. I'm going to leave it there, Howard. Thank you.